It's a trap.
Hello and welcome to episode number 178 of Radio TCX, your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy. I'm Tim Dugan, and joining me, your 2019 X-Wing North American champion, the trophy holder from Boulder, Carson.
Dude, I'm not even from Boulder. Also joining us, we have the wonderful John McDermott.
Hello. Thank you for calling me wonderful. That's nice.
I mean, it's not as good as being the trophy holder from Boulder or the Tiger Shark of Estes Park, but once you win a championship or grand championship, then we can start talking.
Great.
So we've got a great show for you today. We were debating what we wanted to talk about this week. We want to do more Gen Con content. Did we want to get back to some of our general strategy episodes? And we said, why not do both? So today we're going to be talking about list archetypes. You'll hear us use a lot of list archetype language when we were doing like the live stream this past weekend or when we talk on the show. So we thought now would be a good time to jump into a more specific conversation of what those list archetypes are and also why you should bother knowing what they are.
Yeah, and I thought just coming up with some definitions and listing them out was going to be fun, but Tim managed to squeak in some useful advice and make this a good learning episode as well.
I mean, making lists are fun, but, you know, we're going to be able to integrate our top 14 here. We'll break down what those list archetypes were, and then we can give you some practical examples from some high-level competitions that will help you improve your X-Wing game.
All right, well, let's get right to it.
So before we jump into this conversation, too, I thought it would be good to give some recommended listening based on some of our previous episodes, too. You'll be able to get through this episode fine enough, but I would recommend if you want more information on things related to the topic of list archetypes, you want to check out definitely our episode 157, Building a Game Plan with Your List, where we go into detail about ship archetypes, because really ship archetypes are kind of the building blocks of list archetypes.
Right. I mean, and when we talk about list archetypes, it's going to be a lot about understanding your opponent's game plan. And so a lot of the same ideology there comes from episode 157 as well.
And we'll also dive in that strategy category. Some of the gambits might come up here in our conversation. So episode 167, where we talk about gambits, that can give you a better idea of maybe some of the strategies that might be employed by different list archetypes. But I think the real first question here is, why is it important to understand list archetypes? Why do we want to categorize here? It's not just because Carson thinks making lists is fun, even though making lists is fun. John, what are the important factors here for why do you want to know what a list archetype is?
Right. So once you come up with the list archetype that you kind of want to build and play around, what that's going to do is it's going to help you develop strategies of how you're actually going to use your list. So you mentioned ship archetypes. Once you incorporate those into list building, figuring out how they work together, what they're going to do in your list, can really kind of fall under the category of these different list archetypes. Plus, it helps players understand what their win conditions are, because they do vary a little bit from archetype to archetype.
Right, and I think win conditions and strategy is the biggest factor here in what differentiates the different archetypes here, and not just the construction of the list. It's the fact that the constructions are different means you'll have different strategies and win conditions. I also do think it's beneficial to know, especially for newer players, understanding like just big picture list archetypes, because that will tell what your opponent's strategy is going to be. And I think a very common mistake that players make is they get comfortable with a list, but they don't understand how they need to alter their strategy to, you know, play up against different list archetypes. Because you could be running an Aces build and you're doing pretty great against low initiative stuff, and then all of a sudden someone throws mid-range or control at you and you try your same strategies and it doesn't quite turn out the same way.
Right. I mean, this is honestly the first thing I look at when I'm getting paired against a new opponent is, okay, you know, what is the overarching list? You know, what is, you know, not getting too bogged down by, you know, specific pilots and upgrade cards, but what is the broad strategy? And understanding list archetypes really helps you with that.
Okay, so let's jump into this first category here. So we kind of picked one of the more simpler ones to understand right off the bat. Efficiency is a pretty common list archetype you'll see. We'll give some examples here. We're looking at the top 14 from Gen Con. So we have a couple lists, at least one for most of these categories from the top 14 at Gen Con. Now, efficiency is a list comprised a lot of efficiency-type ships, which are ones that generally, you know, the short answer is you get a lot for what you pay. So you don't pay a lot of points. You get a lot of attack dice. You get a lot of hit points, maybe. Good blocking potential, but typically they're lower initiative and they don't have as many abilities. You're just paying straight up for, you know, the chassis and the simple things it can do.
And with efficiency lists, you're seeing mostly the same chassis across the list. So a good example of that would be either a TIE swarm or a Separatist droid swarm. For the most part, every ship in the list is similar or exactly the same. You're going for that high ship count with minimal upgrades, not for diversity here.
Yeah, but with the Separatists, you could choose between the 3-hit-point droids and the 5-hit-point droids. A lot of diversity there.
Yeah, so there is the benefit of you've got some variations between it, but a lot of times still it's the same thing. You're going to see a lot of duplicates or very similar ships in the list because the ships need to work well together. And I think dial synergy is a big part of that too. One of the reasons Separatists are pretty good at efficiency platforms is they have good dial synergy between their ships because they kind of all have the same weaknesses on their dials. Makes them easier to fly in formation.
Yeah, the Vulture and Hyena dials are really similar, which makes them basically fly the same. And so formation flying is pretty important with efficiency.
And there are obviously, we're talking big picture archetypes here. There are subcategories in each archetype. I think maybe two of the big branches you'll see in efficiency is either a straight up swarm like you were talking about, John, TIE swarm or Separatist swarm. A lot of small, really cheap ships that are efficient for the amount of points you're playing. You can also see things in the efficiency category where you've got, you know, maybe 4 ships in a list. They might be kind of those middling pilot skills, the 3-4 range. And you're not really using them for other things. Like, they're not exactly aces. They don't fit in other categories. You're just using them for their abilities, maybe to disperse damage across your ship so your ships don't get killed. But those are kind of the two big picture categories here.
The other thing that sets efficiency lists and this whole archetype really aside from the other archetypes is that these lists tend to be more proactive than reactive. One of the main goals with an efficiency list is going to depend on setting up kill boxes to catch your enemy, just burn them down kind of in, you know, maybe 1 turn, 2 turns, block them entirely. So making sure that they're not getting actions, they're not getting shots on you. Pretty easy to do when you have 6+ ships as well.
So. Right. So yeah, because really they have to use the skills they've got, right? Because you're paying for the efficiency. So mostly it's just the platform, the hit points, the attack dice. You're not going to get a lot of action efficiency. So most of your ships just get maybe 1 action most of the time. But they're going to really depend on being proactive. So they have to make their decisions. You know, mechanically, they're going to activate first and they're going to engage first generally because they're lower initiative. So they have to make their decisions ahead of time and set up plans. So blocking is a huge strategy. When ships activate first, they can block higher initiative ships. Then those ships bump into them. They don't complete their maneuver, which foils your opponent's plans, and they will generally lose their actions, which means they're more vulnerable to damage. So even if you're only rolling up with a simple, you know, swarm of TIE fighters, if your opponent has no defensive actions, you block them, they couldn't escape arcs, even just, you know, several TIE fighters shooting with partially modified shots are going to then do some damage.
I think it's kind of important, too, to point out, like, while these win conditions and strategies might be a little bit more reliable for some of these archetypes, like they can move between the archetypes. So like an efficiency archetype is not the only one that's going to succeed from blocking and setting up a kill box.
Right. But it's just one of the main strategies that they employ.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, so a good example of this is going to be, if you look at the Gen Con cut, we have Richard Hines flying a 7-ship Separatist swarm. He's got a bunch of vultures with energy cell charges and then 2 hyenas. One's got plasma torpedoes and one's got diamond boron missiles. But really what he's got is a bunch of ships that can all throw 3 red dice.
Right. So, you know, when you have 7 different ship bodies here that can all throw 3 red dice, that's just a lot of dice for your opponent to take. Now, in a lot of instances, the attacks won't be fully modified. So he's not necessarily getting rerolls. These ships only take calculate tokens. Thankfully, they can share calculate tokens, which not only helps them on offense, where if they need multiple points of modification, they can get that. It also helps them on defense. And that's another big part of efficiency lists where oftentimes, especially for swarm efficiency lists, losing one individual ship is not so damaging to you because, you know, you can lose one of these Trade Federation drones, maybe even before it shoots, but you've still got the other 6 ships coming after him with multiple attack dice. So the more you can minimize the damage your opponent does to you whenever they take a ship, that's hugely important for efficiency.
Right. I mean, the main strategy efficiency here can kind of be summed up by quantity as a quality of its own, right?
Right, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, in X-Wing, there's just value to be had in a ship, especially if things tend in your favor a little bit on the RNG side. And that's one area where efficiency is vulnerable. So if you're flying these lists and, you know, you're flying Richard Hines' Separatist Swarm and you're just not getting focus results or hit results, you just get a lot of blanks, you don't necessarily have an answer to that, right? If the randomness of the game swings a little against you, you're very susceptible to that. You don't have a lot of ways to modify that. Whereas on the other side, if you just trend a little bit better on the dice element and the randomness, things are going to look amazing for you. You know, if you roll up three natural hits on a bunch of ships here, that's just a great turn for you. And suddenly you didn't even have to spend your tokens on offense. You can save them for defense. And that's just going to upset your opponent.
Yeah, I mean, the nice part about efficiency is they do have quite a big buffer against a few negative variance dice rolls. You know, if your Vulture Droid blanks out on defense and goes away, that's not too big of a deal. You know, if your 80-100 point Anakin blanks out, you're usually losing that game.
So we've got a pretty good idea on what efficiency can do. Let's move on to the next one here. And this one was very popular at Gen Con. This archetype you'll see all over the place because it covers a lot of bases. And we'll talk about why here in just a second. But mid-range was the majority of the list archetypes that we saw from the Gen Con top 14.
Right. And this was sort of the archetype that we like, okay, I think we need to do a list archetype episode to really distinguish, you know, why is mid-range different than efficiency?
And even the term mid-range, we're actually kind of pulling from, you know, Magic the Gathering, competitive card game stuff. For, you know, there's defined archetypes that people know in those other games, like aggro and control. And this one kind of fills in the middle there because it's a kind of a toolbox, right? Oftentimes these lists are comprised of 3 to 5-ish ships. And they're going to use, like, you know, generally named pilots. Often there's going to be, like, an ace in there, or at least like kind of a budget ace. Functions like an ace, maybe not as expensive. But also it's going to combine some more efficiency ships in there, too. So you're going to have kind of the mix between either an ace or a budget ace and then some more efficient platforms.
And that ace is what's really going to separate mid-range from efficiency. And even efficiency lists, you can see, like Carson mentioned, you can have the different types of droids between the Vulture class and the Hyena Bomber. You'll see a little bit of that too here in the mid-range, using named pilots that don't cost much more than the base ships.
Sure.
So if you've got like a generic 25 pointer and then you've got a named 27 pointer, you might see that in a mid-range list. But it's really that ace that kind of separates this from the efficiency archetype.
Right. And so, you know, when you are kind of in that in-between zone that mid-range lists fall in, you know, they're not quite all ace lists. They're not quite all efficiency. They don't really have one set strategy. And that's a lot of times the appeal of the strategy is they can really adapt to what their opponent's doing. You know, when you bring a lot of those mid-tier pilots, you know, your initiative threes and fours, they match up really differently depending on what your opponent brought. You know, Temin Wexley is a great example here where, you know, sometimes with composure, he can be really efficient and have double modded three dice attacks, or he can get an extra repositioning action a turn, you know, when you're trying to dodge a lot of firing arcs from an efficiency list.
And I think one of the reasons that mid-range is a popular archetype, especially at an event like Gen Con, which was kind of going to be a definitive event, people don't know what exactly is going to be popular, so people bring something that's kind of a toolbox for anything. Mid-range lists really do function as toolboxes. So if you're looking at a case where it's a bunch of, you know, maybe a budget ace or an ace with a couple efficiency ships, well, that list can function maybe a lot like a ace list when you're playing something with a lower initiative and, you know, the more efficiency focus. So mid-range can function like an ace list when you're playing efficiency, but it can also function like an efficiency list when you're playing aces. So you get some better values there. Maybe you have a higher ship count than an ace build. You're not going to be arc dodging them, obviously, but you're hoping to get your efficiency and use your other abilities to beat them instead.
Yeah, it's a very versatile archetype overall, and it is adaptive. And like you said, at Gen Con was one of the most represented archetypes. And I think even just beyond that too, because generally you see players, they like to kind of get a mix of ships. You know, they want to try an ace, but maybe you don't want to do a full ace list. And they want to get a bigger pool of ships without actually flying a full swarm. So I think that's why we see mid-range represented so much over the other archetypes.
Carson, you played Matt Carey, Brad Stryzacek, and Ethan Van Sant?
Yeah, I played against a lot of mid-range lists
yeah.
at Gen Con. I mean, and that's why I brought my aces, was I thought there's going to be a lot of mid-range lists.
Well, and you know, we've got five examples here from the Gen Con top 14 as well. So obviously the final table there, you played Carson against Matt Carey. He was running the Grand Inquisitor, which would be your, you know, ace ship in the mid-range archetype. Two regular Inquisitors, which are really efficiency-focused. They have the Force there. They're going to have okay damage output. They're maybe a little weak on hit points, but they've got good agility and some repositioning options that they can beat out lower initiative ships.
Which is going to allow them to act like aces against those lower initiative ships.
And then you also have, you know, Jendon on there, too, to set up some early target locks, which, you know, emphasizes the efficiency of the Inquisitors. If they all go into the first conflict with target locks already, that's a great way to set them up, because they inherently can't get that great focus, target lock efficiency on their own. Jendon beefs them up and enables them to do that. And he can also just give, you know, repositioning actions to the Grand Inquisitor when he needs to function like an ace.
Right. I mean, I think Matt Carey's list is a perfect example of a classic mid-range. You know, you have that one ace that, you know, even in ace matchups, it's got sense, so it can leverage some repositioning. And it can be, you know, an incredible endgame ship against a lot of other mid-range or efficiency builds. And then you got those Inquisitors, which, you know, they can be pretty mobile and outmaneuver a lot of, you know, the lower initiative ships that were quite popular. And then, of course, you have a support ship, you know, providing that early damage output with those target locks. And then, you know, providing coordinates all throughout the game. So just a lot of different options and a lot of different ways you can kind of change and adapt your play style depending on what your opponent's doing.
And then, you know, there's other great examples in the top 14 there, too. You know, Ryan Stanzewski's list, Jessica Pava, Finn, Timon Wexley, and Bastion is another great example of a mid-range list. They can fly together. They're very efficient. They're slightly higher initiative values for two of them. You know, Jess and Timon have the slightly higher initiative values. So if they get into a late game, they can actually function okay against lower initiative ships because they've got some repositioning options, especially Timon. So they could deal with that. You know, if they get just down to those two, they'll be all right. Jessica has great damage mitigation, too, because she can get rerolls, but she also gets offensive input when she has other friendly ships nearby. So they're rewarded for flying in formation.
Yeah, and then you have Mark Moriarty's FO list. He had Quick Draw, two of the Omega Squadron Experts, and Scorch. And those two Omega Squadron Experts are kind of built out the same. They've got the Gunner, and they've got Fanatical, so a little bit of beef there, kind of reliable offensive output. Quick Draw is kind of your ace here in this list. She's kitted out a little bit more than the other ships. Got Fanatical, Afterburners to get that reposition at the end, Pan and Analyzer to give her those actions even when she does a red maneuver. And then Scorch is kind of like your filler in between ship. Not quite beef, he's not quite the ace, but he's got that cool ability that allows him to roll the extra die to kind of just fill out the gap there.
Well, and I think that's interesting, too, because this list is mid-range, but it's got more of an emphasis on attack, right? So Quick Draw hits really hard, you know, trying to hit twice in a turn, losing a shield. That hits really hard. Scorch there, obviously, a super efficient ship to get three attack dice out on the table. You're not getting a sturdy platform, but if they don't shoot at Scorch, Scorch is going to lay down some serious damage. And then the Omega Squadron Experts are hard enough to kill. They've got a really sturdy chassis, and they can still do some pretty solid damage output.
Looking at Ethan Vincent's list, we have another four-ship resistance build here. I think, you know, the resistance are really just all about that mid-range right now. Ethan has Jessica Pava, Red Squadron Expert, the Finn in the pod, and then Chewbacca. And so, you know, this is pretty similar to Ryan's list, except he's got Chewie instead of Timon, and then, you know, you lose a few upgrades because Chewie's a bit more expensive, but you know, now we have a bit more diversity in our ship types, which really does let you play in different ways. You know, you can have that Falcon, you know, just skirting around the outside while your T-70s kind of cut through the middle and provide a lot of cover fire and kind of approach your opponent in different ways.
And the last one, too, Brad Stryzacek's list. You played him in the top four matchup. He had a Kylo Ren with a Lieutenant Tavson in the Upsilon class, and then just a generic Starkiller base in the Upsilon class. This one is a mid-range. It's a little closer. It starts to look more like an ace build. Obviously, Kylo's a really strong ace with the Force and the double reposition, and the Upsilons do count as a support platform, but in this instance, they're most often used because they also put out pretty good damage efficiently. Four value for their primary weapon. able to get at least focus modification on that. So you are using them in a lot of ways for their efficiency. You know, pretty inexpensive to get a lot of attack dice out with a really sturdy platform. But at the end of the day, they also can support Kylo with their secondary, you know, coordinate abilities there too. So it does blur the line a little bit, but I do put this pretty squarely in the mid-range category.
Yeah, I agree there.
All right, let's talk about aces, though. This is one of the more interesting ones to talk about. You see this archetype show up in most X-Wing metagames, and there was representation at Gen Con. Obviously, Carson was running an ace list, so that was really good representation, making it to the final table and winning it all. Aces are a little bit different. So we categorize mid-range often has a budget ace or just a full-on ace. Well, typically, ace builds have at least two aces in them.
Yeah, I think that's the cutoff point for me. It's like once you have two aces, that kind of really dictates your strategy.
And the strategy here is interesting because it's really kind of the inverse of what efficiency lists do, right? So efficiency lists are proactive rather than reactive. Well, aces are reactive rather than proactive. You're spending a lot of points investing in just a handful of ships there. So you don't want to as often make those moves that are more focused on, like, you know, putting them in a place where they might get exposed to damage, because you can do that with an efficiency build, lose a ship, not a huge deal necessarily. If you lose one of your aces and you only have, you know, three maybe, that's going to be like a good chunk of your list gone.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, your main defensive strategy here for keeping your ships alive is just leveraging mobility. You know, you're trying to outmaneuver your opponent, dodge firing arcs when you can, or at least just minimize what firing arcs you land in. And, you know, hopefully you're at range three. You know, use your defensive modifications, just whatever you can to minimize damage.
Yeah, and aces are pretty successful at that because typically you'll see higher initiatives here. So I think once you get to kind of initiative five and higher, you do have some aces that can operate at initiative four, kind of like Mace for the Republic faction.
Yep.
But, you know, if you're thinking about the Imperials, you've got Darth Vader and Soontir Fel are both initiative sixes. For the Scum faction, you have Fenn Rau is an initiative six. Wedge Antilles is an initiative six. So higher initiative allows these ships to get that easy outmaneuverability, avoid arcs while still being able to put shots into their opponents. And they have that kind of hit and run element to their play. You're kind of doing strafing runs. You're going to go in, get damage when you can, and then bug out for maybe a turn or two to reposition, get out of those arcs, kind of regroup, and then come back.
Yeah, and the hit and run is one of the gambits. We talked about in our gambit episode, too, so you can check that out, too. But yeah, it's one of the core strategies of aces is that you do need to take those instances where maybe you move in aggressively. You're trying to come in with a lot of damage but not get shot so many times or at all, and then disengage and re-engage later on. So it's a more long-term strategy. Efficiency typically wants to focus in on a ship and just drive all the damage in right away and remove it. While aces are thinking, well, I'm going to play defensively, move in, get the damage, and then get away before they hurt me too bad so I don't lose value on the exchange. You do really need to protect your hit points here, which is why, you know, aces amongst all the list archetypes tends to have the highest skill ceiling and has a fairly high skill floor. Because if you're not flying aces properly and you only have, you know, Carson's list of Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Rick O'Lee, if you play that wrong and you go kind of for the joust strategy, your ships will just blow up. And it doesn't matter that they had higher initiative. It doesn't matter that they have upgrades and regen. If they blow up quickly, then you've kind of made a mistake there and you're not going to win your games. You need to be able to play at least the skill floor there, understand the core concepts of it. But when you do, there's a lot of room to improve and a lot of room to play at a really high level. That, you know, efficiency lists, they can be good, but they have a pretty low skill ceiling relatively. Like, once you learn how to deal with them, there's only so much they can do.
I don't know, Tim. It's a lot easier to protect your points when you can just regen them back and take them away, take away your opponent's hard work and just, oh, I'll take those shields back, get back above half points. It makes things a lot easier for sure.
And like examples from the top 14 at Gen Con 2, obviously we had Carson's list. We talked about that in last week's episode, so we don't need to dive too deep into that. We had actually a similar list from Josh Benjamin, who made the cut. He had Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Rick, but he chose to strip down most of the upgrades. So Carson's list ran at 198 points, very narrow bid there. Certain circumstances where he could decide who gets first player. Josh Benjamin's ran at 181, which, you know, kudos to him for that's a baller move right there. Basically, he wanted to guarantee that he would control first player, because if his opponent has matched initiatives, he wants to pass that first player over so that he can just react with his ships. So that, yeah, your five moves first, then both of mine move. I arc dodge, I do damage, you're not shooting back.
Yeah, and I think we want to kind of go back to the difference of between Josh and I's lists, maybe at the end there when we're talking about how these archetypes kind of match up against each other. Because, you know, slight differences in upgrades can really tweak your advantage against a certain archetype versus another.
But we did have another example, too, of an Aces build in the top cut there. Todd Grubbs was running Poe Dameron, Lulo Lampar, Taliesin Lintra, and Greer Sahnul, which is a very different Ace build than what Carson and Josh were running, where, you know, Poe's a dedicated Ace. Lulo and Tali also both Aces, but they're a little squishier, too. They're a little more susceptible to dice variants. So they're really dependent on arc dodging and setting up favorable engagements.
I don't really believe you that Tally's an ace. I think Greer's the third ace in this list. I mean, you definitely have some budget aces in Lulo and Greer. You know, they don't get as many upgrades as they'd like. But, you know, you do have that heavy Poe. He's a full ace. But the game plan's the same here. You know, you really are leveraging survivability and, you know, just trying to deny your opponent's points while eventually getting some yourself.
Well, and what separates this list away from the mid-range ones, too, is you're relying on higher initiative. Both Lulo and Tali are fives. Poe is a six, and Greer is a four. And you've got those good pilot abilities as well, which usually in a mid-range list you're not getting just because you have either lower initiative ships or generics in general.
Well, right, because this one's almost an aces build by process of elimination, right? Because if we're trying to categorize it here, you tend towards mid-range, you think that, but then you also realize, well, these ships aren't necessarily that efficient for how many points I'm spending. You spend a lot of points to get Lulo into your list, especially after the points jump recently. So but almost by process of elimination, you have to play them more like aces, and that's why I think they fall now pretty clearly into the aces archetype.
I agree.
Yeah, so those are definitely the three main list archetypes. You have the efficiency, the mid-range, and aces. Most of the lists you face are going to be one of those three categories.
And what's interesting about those three main categories is they have almost a rock, paper, scissors feel to them. Not that any matchups, you know, a win or loss given a circumstance, there's a lot of variables you have to account for, but they tend to do better against one or the other in the cycle.
And that's why understanding the different list archetypes is so important, because you don't want to build a list to counter one specific other list, because you're going to find you're not going to be that successful when you go to a big tournament like Gen Con or even maybe a hyperspace trial at your local store. Understanding how each one works and counters others or maybe doesn't counter others is what's really going to give you an edge.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, the mid-range where they're, you know, just higher above in initiative than the efficiency builds usually, and they have, you know, the ability to leverage some ace play against the efficiency, but, you know, if they lose a ship, they're still not out of it, and they still have a lot of other good ships to deal with efficiency. I think mid-range has a pretty good advantage just generally against efficiency builds.
But to that same end, too, you know, mid-range can play okay against aces, but it also is at an inherent disadvantage, because when you're running a mid-range list, you usually have some more middling pilot skills. Threes and fours are pretty common or lower. Ace is generally running at that five or six range, which means you have an opportunity there as an ace player, if you play your cards right, or I guess set your dials right, you can arc dodge and outmaneuver your opponent's just handful of middling pilot skill ships, and you can also generally initiative kill them before they can shoot. So aces do tend to have a little bit more advantage there against mid-range, just by virtue of the higher pilot skill and the reactive nature of being able to reposition after they move.
Right, they don't have too many more ships than you, and you have just, you know, slightly better initiative, maybe a slightly larger bid that lets you really leverage your superior mobility.
Yeah, and then when you're looking at efficiency versus aces, efficiency is going to have the upper hand here because they have just the strength of numbers. They have, you know, 6 to 8 ships. It's more firing arcs that the aces have to dodge. It's more shots they're going to have to take if they get caught. And it's harder for the aces to be able to take out that many ships before they start taking hits in return. So it's harder for them to protect those points.
And I think this is one of the points of the rock, paper, scissors cycle we set up that is maybe more debatable, because a really high-end aces player feels comfortable against a lot of low initiative ships, I think, generally. But the factor here is like the risk-reward thing, right? Or the amount of risk you're going to incur. Because if you just screw up once with an ace and you land in, you know, four firing arcs, you're going to take some damage. You might lose a ship here. So there's a lot of pressure on the ace player to arc dodge successfully against so many ships, but they also have to worry about things like blocking. Their ship gets blocked, then they lose all their repositioning actions, and suddenly they're just in those four firing arcs again. So not to say, like, you know, generally efficiency has an advantage over ace because they can block and they have a lot of guns and firing arcs they can point, but that doesn't mean that aces are, you know, necessarily at a huge disadvantage to them. It's just like there's a little bit of edge tilting in the efficiency's favor. But, you know, if you really learn to play aces at a high level, that skill ceiling is really high. So you might be able to handle these with no issue.
Right. I mean, if a mid-range list blocks your ace, you know, they might only have one or two shots to follow it up with. Whereas if an efficiency swarm blocks your ace, usually, you know, the rest of their list still gets shots. And that ace usually goes away.
So we've seen kind of the rock, paper, scissors nature here of those three main archetypes, efficiency, mid-range, and aces. Now we're going to get to more, I wouldn't say fringe necessarily, but more of the specialized list archetypes that pull some elements from the other list archetypes, and enough so that they're distinct, I think.
Right, and so these archetypes, you know, they're definitely out there. You might not see them at every tournament, but they do definitely have different strategies than the main three. So starting off, we have your battleship and ace. I guess we should probably remind people what a battleship is.
Yeah, this is one of those ship archetypes we talked about in that past episode. A battleship is generally a larger ship that can take a lot more hits without losing its offensive output. So a battleship is things like, you know, maybe a Fire Spray or the Millennium Falcon or a Decimator, where maybe it's only got the, you know, one gunshot that is equivalent to another ship that has the same number of attack dice, but the battleship can usually take so much more damage that it stays on the battlefield longer and you don't lose those guns. Whereas if, you know, if you're flying another three attack dice ship, like something with less hit points, that could get blown away in the first couple turns. Usually battleships are going to stand for the first part of the game.
Yeah, I mean, so when you have that really strong survivability with a battleship, you know, especially in the early game, you know, your main plan is, you know, that ship can usually trade for multiple ships of your opponent's. And so you just are, you know, trying to deal out as much punishment on your opponent's list while, you know, trying to keep your battleship alive, but really just trying to remove pieces from the board so that you do have, you know, that end game potential with your ace can kind of clean up whatever board state is left.
Yeah, so a battleship and ace list is kind of a hammer and a scalpel kind of build, right? So the battleship is the hammer. It's going to stick around in the early game, lay down that damage so that your ace can survive to the late game and close you out. The battleship has enough durability that it will last those initial couple engagements, and it also needs to put out enough damage to remove pieces from the board. And, you know, lending itself to that strategy is baiting. So baiting is something you can use with your ace. Try to draw your opponent away from your battleship. Because if your battleship is ignored, it can just move in and do so much more damage so much more quickly, and then really set things up for the ace. So the ace doesn't actually necessarily have to engage early on if it just draws enough attention and doesn't take too much damage for the battleship to get in. And it puts your opponent in one of those really tricky decision areas where, well, if they shift on the battleship, that opens up the ace to move in and deal damage, because usually the ace is okay at putting damage out. But if they ignore the battleship, that's going to be so hard for them to take down late game with so many hit points. It'll just catch up with them eventually and just have dealt enough damage over time that you don't have time to kill it at the end.
And that battleship's probably usually built out with some upgrades that you don't want to ignore. So like on a rack build, you'd see maybe like Darth Vader crew. That's going to, you know, either take away your green tokens or do a damage to you. So you don't want to have that on the board for too long, because over the course of the game, that's going to hurt you just as much as the ace might.
Well, right. And so Sam Rothstein's list from Gen Con, he made the cut there too with Rear Admiral Chirinow, a.k.a. Rack, and Whisper. And he did use Darth Vader on Rack there, where he could just rotate that arc, just keep putting pressure out and either stealing tokens, effectively destroying the tokens with Vader's ability, or just dealing the damage, which is also fine. Like a little extra attack you get each turn. At the same time, that Whisper's pretty hard to kill because Whisper's got, you know, possible evades there from decloaking. You've got Fifth Brother there, so you have a force token, so you can get a focus and have the force there, modify multiple defensive attacks. Really hard to deal with. And neither of these seems like a preferable target to start with.
Right. I mean, I think flanking is just so important with the battleship ace strategy, you know, because, you know, both these ships are really big targets for your opponent. You really want to have them in opposite directions. So whatever ship they go for, well, then the other ship is free to commit. I think this worked really well with Sean Hune's list at Gen Con, where he had Han Solo and Wedge Antilles. You know, I really like to see a lone wolf in these battleship aces. And Sean's got that on Wedge. You know, these ships are going to be alone. They're going to be outside of range two most of the game. And you can just get a lot of value there. And what I like there is, you know, both these ships got the boost. So if one of them gets in trouble, you know, the other one can come in and back them up really quickly as well.
One of the things that's interesting with this archetype too, the battleship plus ace, is usually when you're list building, you're starting with the battleship. And I'm not saying there's some specific formula, but usually when you're building your battleship, you have some sort of upgrades in mind that you want to put on that battleship to make it the most effective version of itself that you can have in your list. And it's much easier to fill in with an ace afterwards, because an ace might not necessarily need as many upgrades to be successful.
Well, and I think that's actually very true, too, because oftentimes, since the battleship is going to be a more expensive platform, it's going to kind of define how you use your points. And in the cases of something like the Empire, you know, Decimator's got a pretty standard range of values there, but you can kit it out different ways. And the Empire has actually a great selection of options at varying point levels for aces. So, you know, if you have a lot of points left over, you can invest very heavily into something like Whisper, put a lot of upgrades on there. But if you overkit, you know, or kit out your Decimator more, you might start to go move towards, you know, Soontir Fell there, or even Grand Inquisitor, kind of work your way down there depending on how many points you have available.
Right, and this archetype, you know, hasn't been too successful in second edition, but it was really cool to see two finishes in the top 14 with the battleship and ace. It's coming back.
And another archetype, though, that is a legitimate archetype, we didn't really see any representation from it in the top 14 at Gen Con, but the double battleship build takes two of those battleships there, has a similar focus, but now you've got two ships with really good staying power. They are battleships, so they're not particularly arc dodgy, but they have a lot of hit points and durability, and you're just effectively trying to deal out damage there and end the game more early on, or at least not take enough damage so that you can close out. Since you don't really have an ace there to close, you do need to have a lot more front-focused damage and start removing pieces pretty quickly.
Right. I mean, so we didn't see any of these make the cut at Gen Con, but, you know, this looks like, you know, your double Fire Spray, Boba Iman, or, you know, two Decimators.
Or we saw Ken Cho fly the double Sith Infiltrators at the Denver System Open Series tournament.
Another great example of it too, yeah, where you're investing a lot in those large base ships typically, sometimes medium bases in the case of the Fire Spray, but you can actually do some pretty cool strategies with them because you have so many upgrade options. One archetype I know Carson loves, and that something that really Scum and Villainy specializes in, and actually one of the reasons I think Scum and Villainy's performance surprised us at Gen Con, because we didn't know if there was a list that could employ control effectively, but the control archetype is a little bit different. It kind of relates, you know, it's cousins with the efficiency archetype, but it's got some key differences.
Right, yeah, this can either look like an efficiency or mid-range build, but the strategies are pretty different. Basically, when you're a control player, you want to really think about what your opponent's strategy is and then just try to mess that up as much as possible.
Well, and control lists usually employ strategies that, you know, deal out jams maybe, or tractor beams, or just anything that's going to upset your opponent's skill. And I think we got two really great examples in Scum and Villainy from the Gen Con Top 14. Mike Doyle's list with Torkoal Mux, Captain Seavor, and three of those Marauder Cartel Spacers. A good blend here of Torkoal's ability, really controlly, drop your opponent down to initiative zero so you can kill them before they fire back, even if they're a high initiative ace. Seavor's got an awesome control ability that manipulates what your opponent actually can do with their actions. And then you have the three Marauders there. Those are your efficient platforms to actually lay down the damage once you've, you know, messed with your opponent's synergies with Torkoal and Seavor. You've got the three Marauders there to just put in the damage to start killing things.
Yeah, and then with Mark Grauberg's list, similar kind of concepts, different control maybe. He had Ketsu, Cavil, and Old Tarok. And the combination here is you've got Ketsu in the Lancer class Pursuit Craft, whose ability allows her to basically issue a tractor token to a ship in her two arcs at range one. So not only is she going to lower that ship's agility, now she gets to move it where she wants to, which could be into range one of Old Tarok, who could then take away your green tokens, which just feels bad, man, but that's control for you. And then you've got Cavil here, which can basically shoot you twice with the gunner and just put in a bunch of damage. You've now got no tokens, you've got reduced agility, and you might not even get to shoot back because maybe Ketsu puts you on a rock.
Yeah, this thing can be absolutely brutal. One thing about control is sometimes it does have a pretty high skill floor, where, you know, you're paying for the control effects, which means that these ships tend to cost more than just efficient platforms. So you really need to know how to use them and capitalize on them. If you're not as comfortable with control, you're probably going to want to tend more towards efficiency there, where you're not investing as much. You don't have those control effects, but you're less likely to, you know, get in a bad position and not be able to capitalize on your abilities.
Right. Now, what I really like about, you know, Mike and Mark's list is they're kind of going on the same control strategy. They might get there in different ways, but it's really all about identifying, you know, what is that key ship in my opponent's list? You know, maybe it's an Anakin, maybe it's a Sinker, and, you know, picking that target and making that ship go away really quickly before it can really either damage your ships or support your opponent's lists. Yeah, both really good at dismantling your opponent's strategy.
All right, and now we've gotten down to our last list archetype, which is definitely the fringiest of them, the solo ace build. We actually saw this at this past weekend's Hyperspace Trial, John, that you were running for the Gaming Goat Woodbury. We had a couple of players there. We didn't see any of this at Gen Con, but we had two local Minnesota players, Alexander McDonough and Tim Stern, both run this solo ace build. And another way you can call solo ace is like a 200-point whatever the ace is.
Yeah, and your biggest kind of strategy and win condition here is just protect your ace or protect the queen, if you'd like. Once you lose your ace in this matchup, your win condition goes down significantly.
Right, and oftentimes you won't even have the tools to come back from that. Alexander McDonough made it to the final table at this Hyperspace Trial. His build was really fascinating and super fun to see on stream. We actually saw it multiple times. One time it actually lost, but it still got to do some cool stuff. He had a very expensive Poe Dameron. I think the Poe Dameron was 93 points. So kit it out just as much as you can probably kit out a Poe Dameron. And then we saw Finn in the Resistance Transport pod and Covenel in the Resistance Transport. And, you know, Finn and Kova can do okay damage output. They've got good abilities, but they're very expensive relatively for what you're getting, right? And they also had a lot of upgrades on them. So if they got killed quickly, he lost a lot of points. But Alex's strategy was amazing. He would, you know, bait with Poe and then also position Poe to turn around and start attacking. So he's got so much emphasis on Poe here where he'd have to draw people in. And then hopefully if they focus too much on Poe, Finn and Kova would come in and support Poe, usually by laying down some damage while people are shooting at Poe. But the biggest problem here is if Poe dies, that's basically his win condition gone, right?
Right. I mean, so when you look at the solo ace builds, you know, you have your, you know, pretty expensive ace. It's got to be a good one to really want to go all in on the strategy, but you're also going to have some sort of support ship. So, you know, Alex had Covenel with, you know, the really expensive Leia Organa crew. I mean, so you can get the coordinates, but then you can also just, you know, make Poe's four straight blue, clear some stress, and then do a black 1K turn. So, you know, really surprise your opponent with some pretty cool maneuvers. We saw Tim Sturm use, you know, one of those 104th fleet pilots with the Chancellor Palpatine, you know, giving out coordinates, which, you know, when your Anakin costs 90 some points, giving him some extra actions really helps as well.
Yeah, and, you know, Tim Sturm's list, which had, you know, a really expensive Anakin, the Palpatine arc, and then two Gold Squadron pilots, that actually looks very similar to a mid-range here. The key difference here is, again, once Anakin goes, basically your win condition goes. Because, well, the arc is an efficient ship, the Gold Squadron pilot's an efficient ship, those three on their own can't really handle any list archetype.
They're not finishers.
They're not finishers, and they're not even mid-game ships, right? They're there to support Anakin and put out that little extra bit of pressure. If you lose Anakin, or if Anakin takes a lot of damage real suddenly and has to disengage, things start to get pretty rough for you. But at the same time, though, when this strategy works, it's pretty amazing. Where they can't hit Anakin, the 104th and the two Gold Squadrons just keep putting pressure on there. You remove some pieces, and then Anakin's good to close out.
Yeah, so with all that being said about those different archetypes, sometimes it's not necessarily clear where in one of those list archetypes a list falls. So one of the best examples that we had come up with to kind of cover this debate is actually Andrew Knuckles' list from Gen Con. He had what was commonly referred to as the Sinker Swarm. So he had Sinker in the Republic arc, which allows ships in his side arcs to reroll an attack die. He had four of the Gold Squadron pilot Torrent Fighters and Rick Ollier in the Naboo Starfighter.
And so this is one where actually me and Carson split ways on exactly what this list archetype is. Synchro swarms we've seen before. Oftentimes they employ things like we saw a lot of, you know, Padmes in Nebu Starfighters there, which I think pretty clearly falls in the efficiency category.
Right. Or you just take another arc.
Yeah, something in that point range, right? You go full efficiency. This one's confusing. So I'm of the stance that I still think this is an efficiency build. Because I think primarily Rick's not really even in an ace role as much. He's more distraction and a piece of bait to try and draw your opponents in. You've just got, you know, one upgrade on there, R2 Astromech. The bulk of the list's work is being done by the other ships, the rerolls, and just like the overall efficiency of it.
And Carson, you feel differently, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like just really not sure on where to put this because that Rick Oli, I think this is a great addition into the Synchro Swarm because it really allows the list to approach gameplays at some different angles. You know, now you can have a flanker or just a really big diversion with Rick. You know, he's great at soaking up damage and he's really good at doing some hit and run attacks. And, you know, that more adaptive play style, I think, you know, does lead to a bit more of mid range. But, you know, we have a really high ship count here, which usually mid-range, you know, doesn't quite hit six ships. Although I'm not sure Torrents count as individual ships. That might just be one big ship.
They kind of go in sets. So I think this is the debate here. I don't think me and Carson can come to a conclusion right now. So I think I'm going to throw a poll up on the Radio TCX Facebook page and see what you guys think. Do you think Andrew Knuckles' list falls more into the efficiency category like I do? Or are you over on the Carson side of things thinking it's tending towards mid-range just because you've got that ace in there? And this is the one case where I don't want you to factor Carson's North American Championship status into your decision here. Try to be objective here.
Yeah, I mean, and I think this also, you know, points to a good point where, you know, you have this kind of rock, paper, scissors within your archetype, but you can make these little changes and they can kind of affect how you match up against other archetypes. You know, efficiency, not that great against mid-range, but then suddenly, you know, you put Rick Oli in there and that really changes that. Now you have an endgame ship, one that can really protect points and close out, you know, after Sinker and your troopers, you know, take down most of your opponent's list. Well, when there's less ship on the board and Rick has room to maneuver around, that's pretty good. That's pretty good endgame state.
So let us know what you think. Head over to the Facebook page and give us your thoughts here. And let us know, did we miss any archetypes? Do you think there's an archetype that we didn't cover in these seven categories? We're pretty set on the seven, but, you know, we always love to hear feedback. All right, before we close out, though, we did have a fun live stream weekend. I think the feed should still be up on the Radio TCX Twitch page, so you can check that out, though. We were live streaming the Gaming Goat Woodbury Hyperspace Trial. We had our winner, Andy Sherrill, take the whole event there with a pretty sweet 4-star Viper list. That was really fun to watch. Had a crazy finale game. Definitely check that one out if you only check out one game. But, John, you put on that event, and I wanted to say thank you. It was a really fun event. I was really glad to have the opportunity to live stream that. It had been a little while since we'd live streamed, so it was good to kind of get back into gear.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. And thank you for coming and live streaming it. It was great to have you there doing that, giving us that coverage, and having Paul Olson commentating. That was great.
Yeah, Paul did a fantastic job. A
lot of positive comments about that. Thank you to Andy from the Gaming Goat. Put up the funds for the tournament, bought the kit, all that. So thanks to him. Thank you to everyone that donated prizes. We had a bunch of guys from the Woodbury area donate. Steven Reed donated all the comics we gave out. Ryan Peeler donated some prizes for the raffle. And Eric Figg painted up those cool ships that we gave out in the ship raffle. So thank you to everyone that helped out. Thanks to Big Vic for being my co-judge and to Andy Myers for being my everything else man, entering scores, kind of helping me sort stuff out. And thanks to the Northern Star Scouting Leadership Center that allowed us to host the event there. That venue was great. Got a lot of positive feedback on that. So hopefully we'll be back there in the future to run another tournament.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for putting that on, John. It looked like it was a really fun tournament. I certainly enjoyed watching it in the stream.
Yeah, a good time all around. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, consider going on iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review saying what you liked about the show and why other people should listen.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It's a- It really means so much to us.
Again, folks, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. It's a trap.
Right. Well, and if, you know, one of your vultures blanks out, it's like, it's okay. It's not too bad. When your Anakin blanks out, that's...
Sorry, the cat just jumped on the microphone. okay, let me start that point over.